Welcome to What You Didn't Expect in Fertility, Pregnancy, and Birth. How we think and feel about this enormous transition often lives in the gap between what we expected and what we actually experienced. This gap exists in part because of how we tend to talk about and portray these events on all kinds of media. In a one-dimensional way, everything was amazing. But it's more often the case that there are beautiful things that happen and, at the same time, really challenging things that happen. This show shares true experiences, both the easy parts and the difficult parts, and how we managed what we didn't expect. The intense things that can happen in the course of this transition can impact how you see yourself, how you see your partner, and how you parent. The better we understand what happened to us, the better we can manage all the things that follow. I'm your host, Paulette Pomenica. I'm a writer and an economist and the mother of two girls, and I met many, many challenges in this process, none of which I expected. In today's episode, I speak with a mindset coach about her experience with pregnancy and with fostering and then adopting a child. She talks about what she learned with respect to colic and tongue tie and some of the challenges she met in this process and how she, someone trained in early interventions from birth to three, ultimately had to change the way she approached parenting. What follows is the first part of our conversation. Hi, thanks so much for coming on the show. Can you tell us your name and where you're from?
Yeah. Hi. So I am Angie Grant and I'm from Wisconsin.
Oh, nice. Well, great. Well, thanks for coming on the show. Usually we start off talking about the family you came from and its impact on the family that you think you're going to create. So did you grow up with siblings?
Yeah, I have an older brother. He's about a year and a half older than me. So we were pretty close in age.
That's fun. And growing up, did you think I want a family or I want a big family or I don't want kids or?
I feel pretty confident that I knew I wanted kids really early on. I in particular wanted a daughter. I don't know. That was something that I kind of remember from being really young and just, you know, wanting a little girl to take care of.
Well, that's fun because it seems like that's going to work out since I know some of the story. So with the first pregnancy, is it easy to get pregnant?
Oh, yeah. I got pregnant so fast. I stopped my birth control, and I think within a month and a half, I was pregnant.
That's pretty fast. And what were you imagining the pregnancy would be like?
You know, I don't know if I had many expectations. You know, this was 20 plus years ago, back in the day when everybody bought the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting. I bought it too. So other than that, I mean, not really much expectations. Two of my friends had already had babies before me and it went pretty easy for them. And we were all young. So, you know, I just kind of expected it to be easy and fine and uncomplicated, I guess.
And what was the pregnancy like?
Easy, fine, uncomplicated.
That's great. Oh, my God. Going according to plan. I love it. And so going up to delivery, do you have any expectation of what that's going to look like?
I don't know if I did, but I do know, like I said, pregnancy was so uncomplicated and fine. But I do remember thinking while I was pregnant that I just didn't really want to do that again. And not for any particular reason. I thought, okay, well, you know, I found out as soon as I could back then that I was having a girl. And like I said, I knew when I was young that I wanted a daughter. And so I thought, this was a fun run of being pregnant. As far as like going into the delivery, I didn't really have any expectations. You know, back then, I don't know if people, at least not in my realm, really thought much about to medicate or not, you know, use the epidural or not use the epidural. And, you know, doing a natural birth wasn't even a thing. Not that it wasn't a thing, but it wasn't in my kind of small little world.
I think our kids are around the same age and it never occurred to me to not, you know, go to the hospital and do what they told me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So you and I are on the same page on that. So I looked into this just to see if Angie and I were just out in left field about what people were doing with birth and couldn't find data for unmedicated births in the hospital, which is specifically what we're talking about. To get some sense of the trends, I found some data on home births and birth center births, which obviously don't involve an epidural. They were on the wane between 1990 and 2004 and slowly increased from 2004 to 2017 and were very popular during COVID. The increase likely reflects many things, including a change in insurance coverage that allowed for these kinds of births to be covered. To give you a sense of scale, according to a study published in the Journal of Perinatal Education in 2022, 0.5%, a half a percent of all births were in birth centers in 2019. So the day that your daughter was born, how did you know today's the day? What happened?
Well, my water started leaking. She was actually, it was 6 weeks early. So I say it was uncomplicated. It still was, though. So my water started leaking about 6 weeks early. I really just thought, well, something feels weird. Don't, like, my water didn't break. Just, things weren't normal. So I went into urgent care on a Saturday morning, I think, and, you know, explained to them. So they do their quick little test and they said, yep, it's leaking. So they sent me up to the maternity ward and they put me on bed rest, medical bed rest. But, you know, they weren't concerned about my well-being or her well-being. They just put me on bed rest. So, and they said, just don't go anywhere. So, yeah, so I was in the hospital for about a week, but it was just so uneventful. I was just chilling and watching movies and nobody was concerned about, you know, safety or anything like that, other than if I moved around too much, then maybe it was a problem. But after being there for about a week, I was starting to get stir crazy. And, you know, they're like constantly testing me because I'm in the hospital.
Right.
And so, you know, they kept saying her lungs look like they're fully formed and everything. You know, it looks like she's doing great. She's already got a full head of hair. You know, they were all the things, like, she's doing great. And so after about a week, you know, I had asked, what's the risk of being induced early? And they didn't really bat an eye at it. And now, so she was born 5 weeks early. But now a baby who's born more than 4 weeks early, I think, is considered premature, but she wasn't.
And totally interesting how those standards slide, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because now, like I said, I work in early intervention for birth to three, and I'm pretty sure 4 weeks early is the cutoff for being considered a preemie, where I'm like, preemie? My daughter was not a preemie. She was over 6 pounds. She was healthy. She had no medical issues. She came home with me the next day. So, yeah, it is interesting how things shift over time.
This is an interesting question. Have the standards for preterm birth changed over time? The short answer is no, they haven't. Babies born before 37 weeks have been and still are considered preterm. But there are a number of routes that lead to preterm birth, and in the past, different ways to measure them. One is birth weight. Low birth weight can signal all kinds of different issues. And the second, obvious but fuzzier way to measure it, is with gestational age, which is often estimated based on what the mother can remember or not remember about her cycle. It also matters what issue brought you to an early birth. It could be spontaneous labor, trouble with the fetus or mother, or what Angie had, some kind of PROM, premature rupture of membranes. Each route comes with its own risks. Since the hospital had verified that lung maturity was okay, which is done with a blood test looking at the ratio of two chemicals, they may have decided that the benefits, delivering the baby before infection became an issue, as it can with PROM, outweighed the cost of letting the pregnancy go.
So the next day, that sounds like a fast birth.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, once they induced, the induction itself took a while. They tried, I don't remember, it was called like misoproxil or something like that to help with dilation. That didn't really work so hot. And so they did a couple of different things to then induce labor until they finally broke my water. And then it was game on. And then, yeah. And then I don't even remember how long delivery was, but yeah, she was just doing great. And so, yeah, we went home the day after I delivered.
Wow. And what was postpartum like? Do you remember?
You know, also, like you said, things have changed so much. But, you know, I was back to work in 6 weeks. I love the work that I do. Now, looking back, I wish I would have spent more time with her, because they just, you know, that time doesn't last when they're little. But I, you know, I do love the work that I have always loved the work that I do. And so, yeah, I went back to work after 6 weeks. She was extremely colicky. I know quite a bit now that she's 22, about what caused her colic. She had a pretty extreme tongue tie, but she wasn't struggling to get food down. And so the doctors were pretty dismissive about, oh, as long as she's, you know, gaining weight and she's eating, we're not really concerned about it. But now that I know what I know about tongue tie, I think, oh man, that poor little girl was probably so miserable. And nothing we were doing was resolving it.
It looks like an estimated 3.5 to 5% of the population are born with tongue tie. Usually, it's caught relatively quickly, when it interferes with breastfeeding in a way that limits weight gain. It may be missed, like it was for Angie's daughter, when weight gain isn't an issue. And if left untreated, it could be mild, but it can make sucking uncomfortable for a baby and thus limit a baby's ability to soothe itself with sucking. And the body builds adaptations around the fact that the tongue has limited mobility. It can contribute to dental issues, issues swallowing, sleep apnea, and headaches, as well as back and neck pain.
I was taking, you know, talking with her doctor a lot about the colic, and they just didn't have solutions. Just like, oh, some babies are colicky.
Also, colic is so hard, and I myself did not have colic, but my best friend had twins, and one of them had colic. And it's so hard to have a little tiny baby who is sobbing that you cannot calm down, right? That's such a hard step into parenthood, because you think of that as your job, right? My job is to keep you calm and safe. So frustrating to our 20, 24 ears that the doctors are like, you're fine. She's fine. You're fine. Because that's such a hard thing to do. Also, I'm guessing because she's so early, she's colicky, right? There must be things that weren't formed, right?
Yeah, I mean, possibly, you know, and often she had this lovely woman, she went to an in-home daycare, and she would always just say, you know, oh, I think your daughter's colicky because she doesn't, even as a tiny infant, didn't nap very well at daycare because she wanted to watch all the other kids running around. You know, she's like, I just think she's colicky because she's overly tired, which that could have been part of it too.
Yeah.
But I know the tongue tie has been kind of a lingering issue even still to, I mean, just this week, my daughter and I were talking about it again. I think she's got chronic shoulder pain because of her tongue tie, and totally different topic. But
can it be fixed even if it's caught later on or no?
Yeah, yes. But, you know, as your body grows, it just, so we had her tongue snipped when she was 5 because as she was getting older, it's ideal if they snip it when they're teeny tiny because when they don't need anesthesia. And the recovery is so quick. And then their tiny little body just forms with this, you know, new tongue. Not new tongue, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Versus like I waited till she was 5 and, you know, her structures in her face were already very well formed at that point.
Yeah.
And so the healing is just so different. And I'm not sure that it was snipped enough to alleviate some of the issues. So, separate topic.
No, but totally interesting, right? Tongue tie is also a big thing that people are finding, and it is tricky to get the right kind of doctor to find it. Most of the lactation consultants I've spoken with have said it's got to be a pediatric dentist who finds it. It's not going to be a pediatrician or someone else. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, I work with the population, birth through 3, and it is so rare to find a family who's taken their kid to the dentist yet, right?
Yeah.
So to even have the right expert in there looking, and where we live, I'm south of Madison, but there's one pediatric dental clinic around here. You know, it just they're not everywhere.
That's such a good point. It hadn't occurred to me that you would never take your toothless baby to a dentist. Yeah, that's totally true. That's a good point.
I mean, I recommend it because, right, it just helps to desensitize them and they get used to a new routine. And, you know, parents don't necessarily know what to look for in a tiny baby's mouth as far as like how things should be forming, and you know, and pacifiers create all kinds of, you know, structural changes and all that. So yeah, I've heard it recommended as soon as they pop their first tooth to just take them in, let them check it out, get some used to the routine.
Oh, that's a great idea. I'm glad. Thank you for sharing that. That's a really good idea. So when we spoke before we jumped on this interview, you mentioned that when your daughter was 10, you decided to become a foster parent. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I had kind of mentioned that when I was pregnant with my daughter, I wanted a little girl. And once I knew I had one, I was content with her. But about 10 years later, you know, I work in special education and see a lot of different family dynamics in the work that I do. And I don't know, something just kept calling me to become a foster parent. And I knew that with the working in the autism field and my special education experience, I knew that I kind of had a leg up, right? I deal with challenging behaviors at work every day. And, you know, I've been my gosh, I've been in every kind of family home you could imagine. You know, I've just experienced so much in the work that I do. And so I thought, you know, I have a big heart. I don't have a strong desire to have a bigger family, but I love loving on, you know, kids. And so, yeah, so convinced my husband at the time that we should become licensed foster parents. And he went along with the game, I guess.
Wait, so let me ask a question there. At this point, are you thinking we're going to adopt, or you think foster is all it is?
Foster is all it is, yeah.
And does fostering mean that you have the child for a brief period of time? How does that work?
Well, at least in Wisconsin, which I imagine many other states are like this, that the purpose of foster care is to provide a safe home while they're working on providing bio parents the tools that they need so that we can work towards reunification. Okay. In Wisconsin, that is the first goal every time, is reunification with biological family, because, you know, with the right tools and support, that is the ideal place for kiddos to be, is with their family. So yeah, my intent was not to add kids to our family. Of course, we had discussions about what if, you know, and my answer was always, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. It's not a goal that I was working towards. It was just like, if we can open our home to help some kids while their parents are getting the help that they need, then why not?
That sounds lovely. That's such a kind thing to do. So,
thank you.
So I know that at some point this turns into adoption. So how do we get from, yes, fostering is a good idea, to adopting?
It was not a straight path. So my son was never in the foster care system, and he makes sure that he tells people that. Although in his angriest moments, he would often say that I should send him back to foster care, and then I would remind him he was never there. But no, his biological mom wasn't able to continue parenting him. So she raised him until he was five. And the agency that she contacted to help her find a forever family for him, they weren't, the families that they had licensed that were waiting for children were only licensed to take kids up to the age of two.
Okay.
At least that's the way they explained it to me. So he's five. Mom was desperately looking for help. And one of my good friends happened to be the receptionist at the clinic. So this is how it happened. Yeah. So I remember I was at work one day and I get this phone call from her. You know, she's not a super close friend that we talk to each other very often, but I get this call and she's like, so any interest in having a five-year-old son? So then, you know, that conversation kind of led to, you know, I found out a little bit more about his story and went home and had a conversation about whether or not this is something that we could do. And, you know, our daughter was a big part of that discussion. At that time, we had two boys placed in our home through foster care. So that was part of the equation, too, was, you know, is this in their best interest? Will this impact their stability in our home? Because we didn't want to do anything to upset that apple cart either, as we were, you know, mom and dad were doing what they needed to do. So yeah, so kind of one thing led to another. It happened very quickly. I think that I got that first phone call maybe the second week in May. And I remember him spending Memorial Day weekend with us. So
wow.
Later, spent the weekend with us. And then we did kind of a back and forth transition with his bio mom for about 2 months. And then he moved and he was here 100% of the time. So yeah, it happened very quickly. It happened unexpectedly. It wasn't planned. And I love him to death.
Wait, so how old are the other two boys?
The other two boys at the time. So my daughter was 10 and the boys were 9 and 11 when they joined our home. So I guess at that point, they were probably closer to like 10 and 12. So the boys were with us. The older brother was with us for longer than the younger brother. So he was with us for probably a year and a half.
And the boys are brothers.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. 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 And they transitioned out of our home. And, you know, that was kind of their story with us. We ended up letting our foster license lapse once our son joined our family, because I wanted to make sure that we could provide him as stable of a home as we could. And having other kids who were going through struggles wasn't going to help him.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so we let our license lapse. So those were our last two foster placements, but it was definitely a learning experience while we went through it, for sure.
And what did the adoption process look like for you?
because it was kind of unplanned, I imagine that families, you know, go into an agency and they meet with a caseworker and they write up this kind of, they create a plan. But that wasn't the case for us. Because we were licensed foster parents, we had just recently had a home study. So, you know, a caseworker comes in your home and asks you a gazillion questions about, oh man, about your home and your rules and how you were brought up and your psychosocial health and everything about you and your family and your friends and who you hang out with and how you spend your time.
That sounds a little stressful. Is it feel stressful?
Because you don't want to give the wrong answer, right? The wrong answer, you feel like, will make or break your ability to help this kid or have your son join your family or whatever your outcome is. So yeah, it was quite the process.
That's super interesting because obviously everyone who's a parent knows that it's ridiculously difficult and there's no such thing as perfect. And so I would imagine it's hard to answer those questions because, you know, I'm guessing your parents weren't perfect with you because no parents are. And then what do you share and what do you leave out? That sounds a little tricky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, I'm being super honest, right? When I look back, I don't know if this was so glaringly apparent to me at the time, but my marriage wasn't in a great place. And part of me looks back and thinks that maybe I decided I wanted to foster. Like how somehow bringing kids with difficulties was going to fix the marriage, right? So then, you know, we go through these home studies about the foster and about the adoption. And I remember sitting on my couch and feeling dishonest, you know, as they're asking about you as a couple. And I remember feeling dishonest about what I was saying, but I just wanted to help. Yeah. And, you know, not shocking, the marriage didn't last, having challenging kids in the home, which was fine and is turned out for the better for, you know, for my family. But yeah, it's so grueling. And it's funny you asked that about, you know, no parents are perfect. I sometimes when I'm interviewing on podcasts, I'll joke about like, you can't accidentally become an adoptive parent. You can a bio parent, right? Like a bio parent, you could go have a little fun and guess I'm having a baby. It doesn't work that way with adoption. And the reason that I share that with people is that, you know, each circumstance has such unique feelings that go around with it. And I know as adoptive mom, when I would do something, right, my son came to me with challenges for sure. But when I would maybe say something to him as a parent, or when things weren't going well and behaviors just got worse and worse and worse, the mom guilt on me was tenfold what it was, you know, when I was dealing with difficulties with my daughter. And I think it's because of the pressure that we as moms put on ourselves. Many of us put too much pressure on ourselves as it is. But then, you know, you think about the grueling process and really the promises that I made to him, to his bio mom, to the caseworkers, all these promises to give him a loving, happy home. And then it was miserable between the two of us. We had such a challenging relationship. You know, it's hard to not beat yourself up in that space where, you know, I promised everybody to be this loving, happy home and behaviors were just rough.
Yeah, I mean, while you're saying that, it occurs to me that you're implicitly making that promise to your own bio child.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what, I mean, obviously people get pregnant by accident, but once they decide to have the baby, that's what you're imagining, right? I'm going to give this child a happy home. And you know, half of that equation is not in your control.
Yeah.
Right? It's coming from someone else. So it is difficult, but it's true if you have your own kid. But I so powerfully have a sense of what you're describing as it feels different if you're going to adopt because it involves all this other stuff. And I think the public commitment to other people makes it also feel different, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it sounds like maybe your experience of adoption didn't necessarily look like what you expected it would look like.
Yeah, not at all.
I'm going to stop my conversation with Angie here for today. I so appreciate her sharing some significant information and tips about tongue tie, going to the dentist when the first tooth breaks through, and the possible consequences of tongue tie. I also appreciate her insights about fostering and adopting. Next week, we'll talk about the powerful lessons she learned through her experience with her son and what she shares with other parents. Thanks for listening. If you like this show, please share it with friends. Join us next week when we'll be back with the rest of Angie's inspiring story.